Straight Talk on WRHI is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, Manning Kimmel.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. My name is Manning Kimmel. The program is called Straight Talk, and we do it every weekday afternoon, talking about Rock Hill, Fort Mill, TKK, the great county of York, and everything else up and down I-77. And we do it right here on WRHI, South Carolina's seven-time radio station of the year. Our broadcast presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to HighSpeedWeb.net for streaming our signal 24/7, 365. Well, today on Straight Talk, we're going to find out how well our kids are doing here in South Carolina. The Children's Trust of South Carolina is with us. Dr. Adede Bustles is with us. And we're going to go through the latest. What? What are you laughing at? I did say it right. You know, when you have a live peanut gallery here that has the mentality of these two guys, you know, they probably are in the census figures of people who are not performing too well, both of them. And their parents. Well, welcome to the show, Doctor.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
So tell everybody a little bit about your background, if you would.
Sure. So I come by way of the D.C. area. Came down here for school 4 years ago. Loved it so much. Decided to stay. I am what I call a self-dubbed child health advocacy lover and warrior for kids. And so I'm very excited to be here today.
Good for you. Good for you. And a little bit about the Children's Trust of South Carolina.
So the Children's Trust of South Carolina is the only statewide agency focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect. So we serve the entire state through really serving as a resource for our child and family-serving professionals. We house a wide variety of programs, including home visiting and a lot of other positive parenting programs, in addition to research and evaluation, because we believe in data-driven decisions being the best decisions. And so I head up a lot of our research at the Children's Trust.
And with this data, you are an advocate for the kids through a lot of the legislature and what things that they're doing?
So we're an advocate for the kids by empowering communities to do that. So we provide sound evidence and data for our communities like the Rock Hill area to make good decisions and the best decisions for their children and families. Mm. And so what I'll be talking about today is really a tool that a lot of different communities across the state can use to help make those decisions because we know that communities are different across South Carolina.
So when you talk about being an advocate for the kids and using the data that you have, and I'm sure all this data, and we're going to get into this in a minute, is broken down by county as well as statewide, you could take some of the data for your county, and a particular agency might be able to use that data in their advocacy for funding or whatever for a particular program.
Absolutely. So we are excited to share. What I'll be talking about today is more state-specific, but later this year we'll be releasing county-level data around the same areas that I'll talk about today, and that's exactly what that's for. It's a tool for funding, for policy change, for action on a community level, whatever that may be for your county.
So now the Children's Trust of South Carolina has been around for a while.
Yes.
Correct? Can you give me one or two examples of where your data and your research funneled through the right mechanism has actually created an improvement that is recognizable?
So one of the ways that data is being used currently is through a lot of statewide coalitions. So we have, for example, the Child Wellbeing Coalition, in which we have stakeholders on an organizational, community, and, of course, legislative level that are looking at the data to make decisions. One of the groups that we work with is headed by a state legislator, and she is now talking about ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences, as well as the importance of preventing child maltreatment at the state legislature because of seeing this data and talking to community stakeholders about how it must be considered when we think about health and well-being in the state. And so we're excited to be working with her as she's thinking through some of the ways in which, you know, that she could improve some of our policies that serve children.
So you make sure this data gets in the hands of people who are wired the way you are to make sure the kids are getting the best treatment they can.
So I actually would say that I make sure that I get it into the hands of people that don't normally use data. Wow. So I'm somebody that's using data all the time. I'm in the weeds. But one of the things that I'm passionate about is making data as accessible as possible so that you don't have to have any research background to understand how data affects your community and how it can help inform the decisions you make on a community level.
So now you're going to tell me that all this data that you have is out there on the internet, and people can go grab it anytime they want.
Absolutely. So we have the Kids Count Data Center, which is housed on our website. Our website is scchildren.org. And you can actually pull this data, and a lot of it, in more specificity than what I'll probably cover today.
scchildren.org.
Yep.
All right. So whatever you think is out there from her research, you're going to find it on that website.
Yes.
All right, so go ahead. Let's get into the data. Start telling me what are some of the highlights of what you've been finding so far in South Carolina.
So the data I'm talking about today is the 2019 Kids Count data. And Kids Count is a project of the Annie E. Casey Foundation. And the goal is to really understand how children are doing across the nation. And so it measures child well-being in four key areas: economic well-being, education, health, family and community context, and then, of course, our overall rank compared to the other states. So overall, in the last decade, we've seen a lot of improvements in South Carolina, and this year's data really demonstrates that meaningful change takes time. That being said, we did slip one spot from 38 to 39 this year in terms of our overall ranking. But keep in mind that ranking is in comparison to other states. You have to delve a little bit further into the different types of data that's collected to really understand what's going on. So for some of the good news, we have continued to see tremendous success in teen pregnancy prevention. So over the last several years, teen pregnancy prevention has actually gone down by almost 50%.
Wow.
And as you know, that has some really positive implications for children and families in our state. Another great success we're starting to really see momentum around is parents wanting to be educated. So we're starting to see that parents are more likely to have a GED or high school diploma, and children are more likely to live with parents where housing is not necessarily a cost obstacle for them. So with parents getting more educated, you know that kids will have more opportunities. And when kids have opportunities, we know that our future generation is set up to succeed. In terms of some of the lowlights, we continue to struggle in education. So over 70% of our fourth and eighth graders are not meeting their proficiencies for math and reading. And
what's that percentage again?
Over 70%, yes, are not meeting math and reading standards for fourth and eighth grade, respectively. And then, of course, childhood poverty continues to be a challenge in the state. About a quarter of our children continue to be in poverty, and then about 12% are in extreme poverty or concentrated disadvantage. And that has remained pretty steady over the last several years.
Now, these are statewide numbers that you're giving.
Yes.
All right. And you don't, I mean, do you have any county breakouts on this at all?
Not yet. But if you invite me back, I'm happy to talk about that.
Okay. Well, hopefully we're doing better on some of these up in our neck of the woods than what you're talking about statewide. So the teen pregnancy dropping, what did you say, by 50%?
Almost 50%,
over what period of time?
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years. And you attribute that to what?
So we can't necessarily say that, you know, X caused Y or Y was caused by X, because the data doesn't tell us that. It simply just tells us trends over time. But when we take a look at the context in the state, so we've had a lot of great prevention programming. We've had a lot of work around changing the narrative around teen pregnancy in terms of social norms. We've had a lot of work around, you know, helping kids understand that, you know, there are different ways in which, you know, we can ensure that we are successful in high school. And I think that a lot of those prevention-focused efforts have really probably contributed to the rates that we're seeing across the state.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, again, I can't say that it was this program or this strategy that was exactly why it happened, because I don't think that there's ever one strategy or one program that makes such a big change. It has to be something that happens not only on the local level, but again, on the state level and, of course, nationally as well.
So when you run into numbers that show, for instance, kids are continuing to struggle in education, 70% not meeting the standards for fourth and eighth graders. That's not something new. I mean, these numbers have been like this for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you start asking yourself, what is it that we got all this data? It keeps telling us the same thing over and over and over again. are we using this data in the right way? I mean, are the right people getting this? I mean, why aren't more people reacting in a positive way to this?
So that's actually one of the things that led us to engaging with legislators when this data is released. So when the data was released in early June, we had four legislators come from across the state to talk about this data and talk about ways in which that they have either already talked about different policy strategies or are considering future policy strategies to address education. And based on what they shared with us, education is on the top of their list in terms of improving it for the state. There's a lot of momentum around that. And I do think that, our legislators really being the voice for kids and these four legislators that participated this year being our champions is really going to help elevate it to the next level than, it just being the community that's driving it. Because, again, it can't just be the community. It can't just be policymakers. We have to work together to see change.
I got you. So you say four legislators. Why weren't there 104 there to hear this data?
Well, you have to understand the policymaking process is very complicated. There's many, many issues that policymakers have to, address in a very short period of time. And we're very thankful to have the Joint Citizens Committee on Children. And that is a committee comprised of both legislators and citizens of South Carolina. Really take a lot of this data and help elevate some of the issues around kids on the state level.
You know, I guess I have a different slant on this stuff. These numbers, these statistics have been like this for way too long, way too long. And I know what the issues are, and you started touching on it right up here. Parents. I mean, if you're getting parents better educated, hopefully their kids will become better educated. But when you look at the state of South Carolina, attracting all the industry that it's attracting, industry needs a great workforce in order to do what they do. They're not going to get it. They're not going to get that workforce when you got 70% of the kids not making it to whatever the standards are for fourth and eighth graders. I mean, something's wrong. I know that's not your problem to solve, but I just wonder why Kids Count doesn't ask that question. Guys, we've been giving you this data year after year after year after year. What are you doing about it?
So I would actually say that Kids Count helps get us a benchmark, but now it's up to us to ask why do we keep doing this year after year after year. And when I say us, I mean us as South Carolinians. We are now responsible that we have been given this data year after year, and we need to continue to invest and make changes so that every child has a level playing field in terms of being able to have a quality education. And we know that there's a lot of inequities in terms of your zip code or where you live, as to whether or not you're going to have a good education. And so now it's up to us to really ask those questions, because I think that the Kids Count data gives us that baseline to work from.
I guess I'm envisioning a new role for the Kids Count of South Carolina, a Children's Trust of South Carolina, which is to be a very vocal advocate. You know, the old adage, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease. And it seems to me you've got mountains and mountains and mountains of data, and somebody needs to really start building the coalition to go down to this legislature and say, look, we got to have some help. You've got to address this, because you're never going to apply. You're never going to be able to bring another BMW here or another Boeing if we can't get these kids educated. She's nodding her head saying,
no, I agree with you. And I think that that's an approach that we've already started taking in terms of coalitions and getting some of our very vocal advocates on board to be doing this. So we work with a lot of community partners where their sole focus is education.
Right.
And they sit on the Child Wellbeing Coalition. They sit on a lot of the other coalitions that we are a part of. And they are taking this data and they are going out to their local legislators and stakeholders and saying, we have to do something about this. And we have to see this change. I think that our role is really to help empower them to do that. I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, we can speak for all of the different communities that are served by the state legislature in South Carolina.
Yeah, you know, as passionate as the governor is about education, and he certainly has shown that this past year with all the issues on trying to get the pay straightened out and the regulations, workplace environment improved for teachers, you would think that he would be gobbling up this data and using his bully pulpit as the governor of our state to set the course as to how we're going to start working on this, some of this stuff. Does he have this data?
You need to
get an appointment with the governor, which you could do with that big smile of yours. Walk right in there and say, Governor, you need to know this because you support education and you love South Carolina. We need you in your capacity to take this data and get these men and women in the legislature down here to do something about it. Okay, so much for my bully pulpit for today. We're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break, remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks to our good pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Now, we broadcast live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, where Sophia knows we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week right before your eyes, so she's got a mouthful of one right now. So how do we do it now? One, two, three, here we go. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Ah.
News and information that matters to you. This is Straight Talk.
Hectic schedule? In a rush? Now you can order your favorite Substation 2 sub or salad online and skip the line. Just go to MySubstationII.com, click on the online order tab, place your order, and come and get it. That's MySubstationII.com. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Our common sense investing is not designed to take your life savings, roll the dice, and make you rich. We design a plan to keep the standard of living you have grown accustomed to the same throughout your retirement, be it 20, 30, or even 40 more years. Anderson Griggs Investments, 324-5044, or online at AndersonGriggs.com.
Relax. Love your car payment with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. If you're ready to buy your new car and start making those unforgettable memories, Founders features an easy online application, flexible terms, low rates, 24-hour account access with Founders Online, and fast, friendly service. Visit Relax, joinfounders.com, or one of our more than 30 offices to see if you qualify for membership. Relax. Love your car payment with Founders. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Good Pharmacy, with a modern look and traditional standards.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. All six of our pharmacists love serving you and your children. Ask us about alternatives for your child's medicine.
My mommy loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
What's hot at Substation 2? The new hot beef brisket sandwich. Brisket is smoked tender beef sliced to order, served hot and delicious, and gardened your way. This is a limited time offer, so titillate your taste buds today with a hot beef brisket sandwich at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. Dr. Adede Bustles with the Children's Trust of South Carolina, our guest this afternoon on our Straight Talk program, and I promised her I would not get on my platform and pontificate anymore. She feels better. She feels better. All right. So what other data have you been mining from all the different resources that you have?
So a lot of the other kind of highlights is that we are continuing to also see that children are covered in health insurance. So we have a pretty great rate of children being covered and having that health insurance, which, you know, that cost barrier can be a huge, huge piece of getting access to health. And you know, I was talking to another one of your colleagues earlier today, and I was saying that without good health, they're not going to succeed in school. It's all linked, right? And so that's been really great to see in terms of you know, children's well-being and health being addressed.
So with the poverty rate being what it is, that's contrary to what you're saying here with more kids being covered by health insurance. How's that coming about?
So there are a lot of things that could be potentially playing a part in that. Again, there's not an exact cause, but we do know that a lot of our children, especially children in poverty, are covered by programs like CHIP. And that's continued to be something that we have sustained in the state, and that provides, especially our most vulnerable children, access to health insurance.
Okay.
And so that could be one of the ways in which those data points complement each other.
So on the positive side, we have more kids being covered by health insurance. The teen pregnancy rates are down, and the parents' educational levels are going up. On the negative side, we've got 70% of the children in South Carolina are not meeting the educational standards in the fourth and eighth graders, mm-hmm. and we got a quarter of our kids in poverty. right?
Yeah.
Okay. So brighten the picture here a little bit for me. What else you got here?
So I think that, you know, we could keep delving further into the data, but I think you're getting the key themes out of it, which is that we need to be able to create environments in which children succeed. And that's really where policy comes into play. So we need to ensure that children have their basic needs met, that they're living in a community that's thriving, that has, social support, that has, a neighborhood and physical even neighborhood that looks like it, it's taken care of, well resourced, because all of those things often lead into a lot of the, inequities that we're seeing in both socioeconomic status and education. The other thing I don't want to do is completely overwhelm you with data, because you could keep digging. And data doesn't tell us everything, right? Data tells us a really, really important snapshot of what's going on. But then it's up to us to really delve further into, well, what do we know in our community and how can we use this data to help inform that decision? You have the key themes here. We have to address child poverty. We have to address quality education for all children. We have to continue to sustain a lot of the great success we've had with teen pregnancy prevention and ensuring that kids have health care. And with all of those things kind of happening together, I think you'll see the other data points that we collect through Kids Count improve.
So it's up to each community to decide what it wants to do.
I think that it's up to each community to decide what they want to prioritize. Because the reality is also you can't change everything overnight. Poverty is a complex problem. Having a well-resourced quality education for every child is also a complex problem. We have to focus on small wins to get to the big picture, because otherwise it's going to feel daunting and we'll never get it done. And so that's one of the things that I like to talk about with community members, is that focus on those small wins. There are small things and small but very important steps that we can take to really change the trajectory of a lot of kids, especially the most vulnerable living in these impoverished conditions.
Well, a small win, although I think it's a big win, is what you told us about the teen pregnancy. Mm-hmm. That is going down dramatically. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of different things that are going on in this community to tell kids, what's going to happen if you end up getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that's good. I'm glad to see that's working. I still struggle with how you get this really good data to those entities that can do something with it. Now, you said everything is online, and it's on scchildren.org.
Absolutely, yep.
And so everything we're talking about here is there for any organization here in York County or across the state of South Carolina to use.
Absolutely.
It's a question of them taking an interest in what we're talking about and doing something about it.
So one of the things that I also dedicate my time to is simply doing that, getting this data in front of people. So I give a lot of presentations on how to use this data, what it means for their community or county or region. And I also spend a lot of time connecting with community partners that are looking for data to help inform their decisions. I'll also note that I know that you were interested in that legislator piece as well. I recently completed a study with 24 state legislators about how can we better communicate research with them. What are the ways in which that I need to disseminate this information, where you can get it quickly, you can understand what the wins are, where are the areas of improvement, without being overburdened by a lot of the other, things that they have to take care of in the short time that we're in session. And so that research study has really helped in understanding how I need to take these statistics and really pull out what's most important for legislators that are interested in making change.
So what did you find from that?
We found a lot that research is important to legislators. But again, along with kids' issues, they're dealing with a lot of different things. And so for them to be expected to be an expert on every single issue is just not possible. And so as child health advocates, as researchers, we need to make data accessible in a way that gives the bottom line up front. And most importantly, it's coming from somebody who's credible, somebody that they can trust, so that they can rely that these are the figures that I can go ahead and then use as I'm discussing different policy options with my colleagues in the legislature.
And we live in this soundbite world. Everybody has one of these things in their pocket, and they look, if it lasts more than a second and a half, it's old news. And when you're talking about the kinds of data that you've been mining, mm-hmm. you got to really put that in a simplistic form.
Yep.
Little bullet points, boom, 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 because people are not going to read all the background to that.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that that's an area that researchers can really improve upon. We're used to using lengthy reports and lots of words to explain where we're going. But the reality is people that are using data to make decisions, they need to know the key pieces in a way that's easily digestible and can help them spur action in their community. And so that's one of the things that I'm dedicated to, is making data more visible and more accessible to those that are making those decisions, because they're not typically researchers.
So you've got your PhD.
Yes.
And is it in data of some kind?
It's in public health.
Public health.
Yes.
All right. So with all that being said, if one of these legislators gets this nice summary of data and something strikes their fancy, I'm sure if they needed more background to that, they would call Dr. Oddity, and you'd pull it together.
Yes, and we have gotten those requests before. Even when the study was completed with the legislators, I then turned around and provided them a report with very high-level findings of what they themselves said. It was 2 pages, and it was straight to the point, even though the actual research study had pages and pages of data. And that's what they needed. They wanted the bottom line.
Sure.
They wanted to understand. And that's really important for building credibility and building trust, which is a key component of a lot of policymaking as well.
So you are in the process of taking this statewide data and breaking it down to local data?
Yes.
All right.
So we actually use local census data to mirror the 4 domains that are measured in kids count at a county level. And we will be releasing that in the form of data profiles, hopefully later this year. Early fall is what we hope.
So that means you got to come back up here again.
I'd love to come back.
So what's the next step for the South Carolina Children's Trust? I mean, besides the mining of data, that's just part of what you all do.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is the advocacy.
So I like to think about our work in 4 key buckets, okay? So we build coalitions, and I've mentioned a couple of them that we are working on. We have a lot of work with regional coalitions as well. We provide resources, so as a member of the research and evaluation team, I'm continuing to produce data, reports, and research that's relevant to our community stakeholders on topics related to child well-being. We administer parenting programs, so we have we've expanded our work in 3 kind of buckets. So we are the home visiting grantee of the state, so we administer a lot of home visiting programs. We are also doing Triple P, which is the positive parenting program across the state, and then we also have the strengthening families program, because again, we know if parents are doing well, kids are doing well. And then our final piece would be training. So we provide a lot of training on things like how to use data, or what is child well-being, you know, how does childhood trauma or ACEs have a role in child well-being? How can we build protective factors or resilience? And these are all tools that we have available for free to our community members and people that are interested in learning more and how they can become a champion for kids.
Are you finding most communities are jumping at the opportunity to grab this stuff?
Yes. I'm very excited to share that, for example, our training program, we've had over 30,000 South Carolinians trained over the last 3 to 5 years. And that is ranging anywhere from your social workers in schools all the way to the Rotary Club that's just interested in implementing programs and policies for their workplace that is building well-being for their employees.
Well, Dr. Oddity Bustles, thanks for being with us. Thanks for coming up from that capital down to the south in Columbia, where it's hotter than it is here in Rock Hill. Dr. Oddity Bustles with the Children's Trust of South Carolina. Thanks a whole bunch.
Thank you so much. We'll get you back
for the local stuff, okay?
I look forward to it.
And that'll wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Now, she has finished her sandwich, so she is ready to lead us in the chant that we do here all the time at Substation 2. It's because this is how they do fresh subs and salads 7 days a week. So, Sophia, would you start us with it? 1, 2, 3. Here we go. Come on. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. That's it. Have a wonderful day. See you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.